I feel so professional right now.
Good afternoon, BioWare.
Hi there. We need to be transferred to extension if possible.
One moment, please.
Thank you.
She has no idea I'm on the line. Why would you say we?
Oh.
Welcome to the Rated NA podcast number 82 for the website nerdappropriate.com. We are here today, all of us, and we've got a special interview to go along with this podcast. Hillary, why don't you tell us who is on the show?
So we are going to be joined by Mike Gamble, producer for Mass Effect from BioWare, and he's going to talk about Omega, which is pretty exciting, the new DLC featuring Arya and friends, and the new female Turian, Nyrene. So we get to talk to him about that, and then also the Wii U launch, as well as the trilogy, and then some stuff about how to get a job in the video game industry, which is always a lot of fun. So we're pleased to have him on the show, and it'll be awesome.
Yeah, it was a lot of fun. We had a great time talking to him, and he has a lot of insight as to what to do if you want to get a job in the industry, and also how he got started, and other fun bits of information about the Mass Effect franchise, which is always fun to hear about.
That's awesome.
Yes.
Excellent.
Yeah. Let's do the rundown.
Scott, what else are we talking about today?
Well, we're going to talk about the latest Borderlands 2 DLC, Mr. Torque's Campaign of Carnage.
Explosion!
Explosion!
Yeah!
Beep, beep. Okay.
Yeah, that like freaked me out. Just saying.
I was like, play that shit. Explosion!
I've been running around the house all week just yelling that.
We're going to talk a little bit more about Assassin's Creed 3.
Stabbing! Yeah!
Oh, no.
Wait, we're going to talk a little bit more about Assassin's Creed 3 and Halo 4 for anybody that listened last week.
Yeah. Shooting aliens. Yeah. Oh, my God.
So we'll also review the last installment of Walking Dead, Episode 5, No Time Left.
Fucking zombies! What?
And the latest Spielberg joint entitled Lincoln. I heard it was pretty good.
Abraham Lincoln.
Assassination. Spoiler.
It all ties in. Assassin's Creed, John Wilkes Booth.
Did you ever think that Lincoln might somehow imagine that one day he would become trendy and awesome? Like,
hunting like vampires
150
and such?
Years later? Yeah.
Yeah.
He knew he was a badass.
Yeah. He knew.
I don't know.
Emancipate. What?
Well, good for him.
He's like one day Daniel Day-Lewis is going to play me in a movie. Badass.
I'm glad that Lincoln guy is finally getting some traction. I'm really, really happy for him.
Yeah, it's about time he became popular. Yeah.
It was Washington and Jefferson for too long. Let's admit it.
That's true.
And for Ben sure. Franklin. He was a pimp.
Lincoln needs to be on all the fucking money. All of it.
What?
So what have you guys been doing?
Eating turkey.
Yeah, so Thanksgiving just happened. And I think, you know, I was sad because I didn't get to spend it with you guys.
Oh,
I wanted to like slowly feed you guys Thanksgiving dinner.
You could have done it with Scott.
Put on some. Well, where was Scott? Were you here in town?
Yeah, I was actually. But my dad was up here.
Oh, OK.
Yeah.
I entertained the mother-in-law. And,
and
now she actually retreated and now she's up to visit Matt.
She's in New York.
All right. So did anybody buy anything on Doorbuster Black Friday?
It's
explosions.
Funny.
No.
I did. I did some doorbusters. I didn't go out. I didn't leave, but
no,
I did.
I didn't go out either.
I did computer aided doorbusting, and it's funny because I did yell doorbuster like all day. I would just add doorbuster to like random things. Like I have to check my email doorbuster style.
Excellent.
So what did you pick up?
I picked up Halo because you guys said it's good, and I got it. Through Amazon, through a doorbuster, if you will.
Awesome. Was it like 25, right, or 30?
Yeah, it was like, I think it was 30, and then I got like a gift certificate and a $10 Amazon video credit,
yes,
which was
awesome.
Excellent. And I picked up the Hunger Games Blu-ray for $8.
Nice.
Yeah, yeah, I saw that.
Yeah, and I got a new Garmin because someone stole my Garmin out of my car.
Oh, really?
Wait, why That's do you awesome. Need a Garmin? Don't you have a smartphone?
I do, but it
He's got a tweet while he's driving.
Yeah, I got other stuff. I have to watch, like, hey, Ash, what you playing while I drive. And so my phone needs to be.
Ash is literally one of the most dangerous drivers, I think, at 5 a.m. going to work. It's like he's like tweeting and watching YouTube and driving at the same time, very tired, drinking, you know, power drinks.
While eating a sandwich.
While eating a sandwich.
I made it a little overboard this year with the Black Friday doorbuster games.
Oh, yeah.
Because I figured this is a good time to start building up the summer game pile, right? So I just went crazy and got like a bunch of stuff. So I ended up getting Syndicate, Dishonored, and XCOM, and I got Fable the Journey for the Kinect because it was dirt cheap. And I'll play anything on Kinect. You guys know how I am.
Yeah.
Well, I saw that the XCOM was very cheap.
It was. I almost got it.
Yeah, it was like 25 bone, and I totally missed it because I was in Italy when it came out. So
it was good. You'll enjoy it.
All right.
So you know what I was shopping for?
What's that?
Yes.
A place to live.
Because I think next time you hear from me, I'll be recording from a cardboard box on the side of a freeway.
Oh, no.
I'm a hobo, guys.
We would never let that happen to you.
No, we would. You're totally
welcome. You can come live in Brooklyn with us.
Okay. Yeah. Melissa and I.
We have a den you can live in.
Yeah, there's probably more room in Florida. That was like a false statement.
Yeah.
I mean, you could come live here, but there's not a lot of room.
Yeah.
What about my dog?
I have a husky at my house right now that that is not welcome here, but she's here anyway.
Oh, she just needs attention. She's why a little older in her life.
Why don't
that's
you
all.
Play with the husky? Husky's awesome.
I was playing with the husky.
She's like a wayward kid that, like, you know, just needs somebody to tell her what to do. And then once that happens, she's fine.
Yes.
Huskies need a little extra help.
They do. They're a little needy. Let me tell you what I got, guys.
All right. Yeah, let's hear it.
Just in time for the PS4, I bought a PS3.
Nice.
That's awesome. But you got some sweet games.
I knew they were doing like doorbuster deals, and I was actually going to go to GameStop because I thought that would be my best chance of actually making it in a store and buying a thing. Because they were doing like a 5 a.m. doorbuster thing. I didn't want to get up, but I was like, whatever. And then at 8 p.m. on Thursday,
that's crazy talk. I don't understand that at all.
It was like post turkey time, and I was just sitting on the couch and I was watching TV and I had my tablet out. And I went to Best Buy just to see what their deals were going to be because I was like, maybe Best Buy would be tolerable. Although I realize now that that was the dumbest idea I've ever had. And I go and it was like, doorbuster deals online available now. And I was like, what? And I clicked and I got a PS3 with Uncharted 1 and 2, Infamous 1 and 2, and it's a 250 gig PS3 for $200.
Nice. That's a deal.
Let me tell you, man, Uncharted 2 is going to make you feel good in your crotch region.
I love that game.
And then I picked up, they had a controller deal going too, where you could get a second controller in Killzone 1 through 3 for $35. So I picked that up too.
Nice.
So I've got like six games or seven games on the PS3, but I really got it because I wanted a I don't have a Blu-ray player yet. So
summer game pile. What?
So I still don't. Sorry. Go ahead.
Sorry. I need to play Metal Gear. That was the only other thing.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. So I don't understand this whole, like, let's open the store after a bunch of people have eaten a ton of food and, like, seriously walking around the store with a bunch of farting people.
Dude, the shopping thing is like out of control. I mean,
I don't understand it. Like, let's get into a big crowd of people who've just had a lot of food.
Well, that's the thing is that retail is trying to compete with the internet now, so they're going to do anything that they can do to like steal that business away. And getting people excited about going out to shop, I think, is the way that they're trying to do that. So it is what it is, you know.
Why didn't they just do like? I mean, I know Best Buy opened super early too, but like, I was super content just to go on their website and pick up the game pick up the system on Thursday, you know? Like,
that was the smartest thing to do, is just put stuff online. In addition to your retail store, that's a good move.
There was a really good article posted about that this might be the death knell of the big box stores, that they're like struggling to compete even during the busiest shopping days of the year.
Well, I think it's sort of a vicious cycle though, because the crazier they make it, the less a lot of people want to be a part of that.
Yeah,
10 years ago, it wasn't like this. There's no way. And now it's like, it's ridiculous. Like, Best Buy opened at midnight.
Yeah.
People were lined up the night before. You're like, are you kidding me? Like,
Target opened at 9 p.m. on Thursday.
Yeah.
That's insane.
So what would, you know, I was actually having this conversation with someone the other day. Like, what would happen if you had to shop exclusively online for things like your plasma TV? Would you like that? I think for me, like, there is something to be said about going to a store and seeing it. I may not buy it there, but,
Well, that's the problem that they're having, is that that's what people do.
I know.
People come in and use them to window shop Amazon, essentially.
Yeah.
Journalists has actually made up a term for that, too. I can't remember what it's called, though.
Called funky shopping.
Remember when Because Amazon put an app out that you could go scan products at Best Buy and Target and see how they were on Amazon. And all they were doing was having you basically crowdsource their competition because you would let them know how much they're selling stuff for at different times. And all it was crazy.
Yeah, well, that I'll tell you crazy. What. I mean, last time I went to Best Buy to look for a game, their game shelves were like a fucking mess. And they were like out of everything that was brand new. So in my mind, I'm like, what's the point of coming here anyways if you're not even going to stock and clean the store, you know?
Yeah.
Well, for me, it's totally different too because I'll go to GameStop or Best Buy or any other video game retailer, and you know, if I'm with Dave, the person who's selling is only selling to Dave. So it's like it's so frustrating when I'm like, he doesn't even play these kind of games. You know what I mean? And I'm sitting there like, tell me about this one, and then they look at Dave, and I'm like, are you serious?
Sounds fantastic.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's awful.
Throw shop them next time.
That's why I shop online.
Let's get into this interview, guys.
All right.
This is our interview with Mike Gamble from BioWare.
Okay, we are here for Rated NA episode 82. This is our Mass Effect Omega special with special guest Mike Gamble. Mike, thank you so much for joining us from the icy wastes of Canada.
No problem.
I like to be.
I don't mind it at all. Our phone lines kind of get unfrozen once in a while, enough to let a few calls through. So I'm glad this is one of them.
Yeah. So thank you so much for joining us. We're pretty stoked about Omega, and we're glad to have you on. And we're going to chat for a bit about some really exciting Omega news. And let's go ahead and get started. Omega DLC. Where did you guys get the idea, and what can you kind of tell us about this DLC that maybe you have not told other folks yet?
Okay, well, the idea was it was kind of obvious to us. I mean, like, Omega has always been extremely near and dear to us, and you know, within ME2, we really focused on it quite a bit, and it was significant. And in ME3, you know, the focus for the main game was obviously on the war with the Reapers and showing off, you know, all the amazing portions of the galaxy that people had never gotten to visit in previous games. So, you know, Thessia, Palavin, places like that, right? Mm-hmm. And, you know, for the DLC aspect of it, it's important that we focus on, you know, specific adventures that are really important to the narrative, but not, you know, explicitly, you know, dealing with the war with the Reapers. And that kind of was where it started. Plus, you know, take that and couple it with the fact that Omega is this really iconic place for us. It's visually Absolutely. Iconic. Arya as a character is extremely popular, but, you know, she's loved here, she's loved within the fans, and she's a very different character than you know, one that you're used to dealing with in the game. Take those things together, and it's kind of a no-brainer for us that we wanted to revisit Omega. Plus, Arya has a huge chip on her shoulder, and she's always had it kind of against Cerberus, and we feel that the DLC is a perfect place to kind of just tell that story.
Excellent.
So, Mike, actually, when I met you a couple years ago at Comic-Con, you said that Arya was your favorite character. Is that still the case?
Yeah, you know, my favorite character kind of wanes now and again. Back when we were doing Comic-Con, I was still in ME2 mode. She's pretty high up there. Now I think I've taken more of a liking to, I don't know, I'm pretty much all about Hackett throughout ME3.
Oh, Hackett is such a badass. He is great.
And for Omega, like for the DLC, I have to say I think Nyrene is probably my favorite character. So Nyrene is this badass female Turian that kind of complements, I guess you could say, the relationship between you know, Arya, Shepard, and Omega. She kind of acts as a different point on the compass, so to speak, and she really makes things interesting in terms of that dynamic. And she's grown to be my favorite character. She's super badass looking. She's amazing in a fight. So yeah, I think she's my favorite now.
Awesome! Wow.
So I'm personally really excited to see the first female Turian. And did that really come from fan feedback, or how? how was it? How did the idea come about that you wanted to, insert someone like Nirene?
Well, it's a bit from fan feedback and a bit from us, obviously. The big thing here is that a lot of these races and species in the galaxy have, male and female variants, right?
Mm-hmm.
We don't always have the opportunity to showcase, both genders or all genders in a specific, race, right? And we've alluded to the female Turians a lot in the past, and people know that they exist, but we've never actually showcased it and featured it. And when we did, the team in Montreal, they really wanted to make her extremely special, integral to the story, integral to the DLC itself, but also to make her appear completely awesome. And
she does.
Yeah, she looks
incredible.
Amazing. It's important from that perspective, but also I know that fans have been asking for it for a long time. I know that the writers, Anne and Neil out in Montreal, really took that to heart. They listened to a lot of what fans say, and I think part of all of that together is why they chose to make her such a significant presence in the DLC. Why she just wasn't, a bit character. She was custom from the ground up. It's a bunch of things, really.
That's great. Now, from a lore perspective, is there a reason, why we haven't seen female Turians? Is it because, it's mainly because the males are frontline fighters and the females are, off doing something else, or?
Well, I wouldn't say that there's a hard and fast rule. I would say that, the majority of the Turian military, obviously, there is male, and we focus, on the Turians being kind of a really militaristic society, and
mm-hmm.
A lot of ME3 kind of frames that with them being, front and center in terms of the battle with the Reapers. And so we wanted to, when we showcase the female, have something, as equally important going on, but not necessarily the front lines of the military kind of thing. And I guess that's why Nirene really fits.
That's excellent. And I think you guys just maybe on Facebook today or yesterday released that she's a gang leader, right?
Yep. Yeah, she's a gang leader of... Yeah, the talent. And... But it's not all that you would kind of make it up to be without playing it. There's a lot of kind of twists and turns, and you'll quickly realize that, like everything on Omega, there's a lot of moral ambiguity. So, a lot of people, they work for their own ends, or they don't necessarily work for the good of others. And the gangs on Omega are kind of different.
Mm-hmm.
The Talons are, obviously super, super, repressed by Cerberus. And traditionally what they've kind of ruled by fear and violence and things like that. And with Arya and Nirene on Omega, it kind of changes things up a little bit. And some uneasy alliances kind of form out of that. So it is really dynamic, really exciting. So you got to play it to see.
That is awesome. Cannot wait to see it. Like itching like crazy to play this, so I can't wait.
Awesome.
So recently the trilogy was released with Mass 1, 2, and 3. How did that feel to see, the end-to-end story all come together?
Yeah, it's a pretty big trip for the team, for all of us, really. From everyone all the way from Casey down to folks who have just joined for Mass Effect 3, it's significant to see a large body of work that we can all be proud of kind of packaged together in this beautiful package. It's very rare where we're able to do something like that, because the trilogy itself is meant to be a trilogy, right?
Mm-hmm.
It was meant to tell a story arc, and we stayed within the same console life cycle there. It's all on the 360, all on the PS3. Well, now it is for the trilogy, and using a similar engine with a similar save game that you can carry throughout. I don't think that's ever been done.
No, and it's incredible.
So cool.
it's one of those, you can look back on it, and I think Casey kind of said it best, and he wrote a letter to the fans on his website recently. He basically said, from seemingly, and I'm paraphrasing here, a small package that, appears on someone's desk really has so much hope and meaning behind it. As soon as you break it open, you can basically see this massive saga unfold, and there's hundreds and hundreds of hours of gameplay that's kind of included in it. And from the team perspective, when we look at that, we kind of it invokes a lot of feelings, you know, where we're happy, where it's bittersweet for us. It reminds us of all the late nights and, you know, the snowy winter nights that, you know, we put into making this game.
In the wastes of Canada.
The wastes of Canada. The whole team. The whole team has
frozen,
frostbite.
Yeah.
Eating the week.
That's right. Yeah. So, you know, all of those things. And we look at it and we're extremely happy. And the fans have made it completely possible for us to do this. You know, a lot of people can say that they're happy in their job where they make games and things like that, or many people within our industry can, but not many can say that it was basically the fans which helped craft the way forward for this trilogy, providing the feedback and most importantly providing the support. And when we look at something like the trilogy, none of it would have been possible without the support. So a lot of feelings kind of get triggered when we see the trilogy and when we talk about it.
Absolutely. I mean, I think for a lot of us here at Nerd Appropriate, Mass Effect 2 is like, you know, on a very short list of our favorite games of all time. Like, I continuously gush about it. It's just, you know.
Well, not to mention multiplayer. We play multiplayer all the time.
About multiplayer for a minute. How shocked? Well, not shocked. I mean, I know you guys probably knew it was pretty good. But now, even, you know, other gaming blogs and everything have pretty much agreed that, holy cow, this is amazing.
It's like the best.
They did an incredible job with this, and people are just gunning for it to continue. So how does that feel to actually have that? Because people were so apprehensive, and I remember reading so many sites, and people just were, you know, ready to blast it before they ever got a chance to play it. And
yeah.
Then once they got their hands on it and realized that it was, you know, something really special. How did that feel for, you know?
Well, you know, it's really difficult when you're coming up with something new and when you're presenting it to the world. You know, we put a lot of time, effort, you know, our hearts into something, and this is no different than many other games, but specifically with, you know, with the trilogy and Shepard's story, kind of worrisome. You know, when you put something together and people haven't seen it, and you have to prove yourself, right? You have to prove that based on your ideas and your execution that people are going to like it. And, you know, we find out that we're worthy of people's attention and money and praise and all that kind of stuff. So, you know, after the first game, I can't speak personally because I wasn't on the team way back in the first one, but they really, you know, established a good foothold. And then they took the feedback and they looked at things for 2 and 3 and just wanted to make it continuously better. And, you know, it is a difficult thing because when you look at a game and a franchise that you've developed, there are always things that you want to do better. There's always things that you want to iterate on. And picking and choosing those ones that you think would make the best possible game is kind of a challenge. But, you know, you develop it around a really good team. You have, you know, a lot of the same guys here who have worked on ME1 or working on ME3. And I'd say the vast majority of the team who worked on ME3 also worked on ME2. And we've developed a really good camaraderie and a really good set of processes on how to make this. And it just comes with time, you know. And as you develop and mature a team, and, you know, when you have great leadership on that team, all it takes is a really good set of ideas and, you know, basically the sky's the limit. And we've been very fortunate. We've been very, you know, lucky to be supported as a studio to make the trilogy. And it's really exciting to see where things will go next because, you know, we've got a lot of great ideas about, yeah, you know, where we want to take things next. And we're literally just in the ideation phase. Nothing has really been locked down yet.
Mm-hmm.
But knowing that we have this trilogy behind us that has so much fan support, I think that the kind of the future is extremely bright. We're extremely positive about it, right?
Absolutely. I mean, it's such an incredible universe. And, you know, we were lucky enough to have Patrick Weeks on, I guess, a couple months ago at this point. And just talking to his, you know, his wealth of knowledge about the Mass Effect universe, it's pretty apparent that everyone that writes just is in love with the universe and just wants to see it continue. And that goes, I'm sure that trickles down to, like, you know, pretty much everybody on the team, but it is a really magnificent universe to play in.
Well, I just love the idea that you can.
I think we may have lost him.
Hey, Mike.
Welcome back.
Hey, guys.
So we're just going to pretend that what happened last time didn't happen, and we're in a time vortex, and everything is just fine.
Okay.
So, Mike, what can you tell us about Mass Effect for the Wii U? Can you tell us a little bit about what some of the bells and whistles for that are?
Yeah, I mean, you know, Mass Effect for the Wii U is, I think, like most people know by now, a launch title with the Wii system. And essentially, it's the core Mass Effect 3 experience. It has a couple extra bits in there. It's got Fronto. That includes Javik, the hilarious Prothean squad member who pokes his way around. And it's got the extended cut on there on the disc. And we also use the Wii Pad in a number of different ways. So you can basically, you know, tell your squad members where to go using the Wii Pad and cast certain biotic powers using the Wii Pad. Kind of just integrates seamlessly into the game. So it's kind of a definitive Mass Effect 3 experience. And, you know, we're really, really cool. And we're happy that the Wii U is a good place for it to exist on.
Excellent. I heard rumblings that you can actually use the new Wii Pad as a sort of a augmentation of your mini map. So like enemies appear on the mini map to help you, kind of navigate a little bit easier. Is that true?
That's right. I mean, you can use the Wii Pad, which basically projects the mini map to you, to kind of get a heads up and the lay of the land, basically. But you can also, like I mentioned, direct your squad members to different points on that mini map, basically using touch commands, and they'll just move to wherever you point them to.
That's awesome. So it allows you to be a little bit more tactical, and it that seems like it would work really well for like an insanity playthrough where like tactics really, really matter.
Exactly.
I haven't had the balls to do that in Mass 3 yet. I'm still gearing up. Because I did the Mass 2 playthrough on Insanity, and it took a lot out of me. I think I got like a few gray hairs, and yeah.
I pretty much have to force you to do platinum runs on multiplayer.
Yeah, no, for real. I'm like, bronze is fine. Let's just let's tell bad jokes and sit around. And Hillary's, no, platinum. I want to be the best.
Well, you know, if you're gonna do like a Insanity playthrough, you might as well start with some really good DLC installed, so you know there's no time like the present, really. You know, for Omega's launch, you could just kick it off there.
Seriously, yeah,
I'm so excited.
I'm really excited, actually.
So, go ahead. I was just going to ask. So, I know a lot of our listeners are really big fans of BioWare, and really want to know, how did you get your start in the industry, or if you have any advice for people who may want to work specifically at BioWare or just getting into the games industry.
Well, you know, there's a couple different approaches. Like, so first of all, if you want to get into the game industry, you have to realize, like, before you even do it, not to kill anyone's like hopes and dreams, but it is a job. Like, it's a great job, and you know, it's really rewarding at the end of the day. But it has its ups and downs, right? So there's a lot of hard work that you have to put in. You know, there's a lot of time where you have to make sacrifices so that you can, you know, put out a better product. You know, you have sacrifices of yourself, your family, things like that. But that's true to all games, essentially. You have to
sacrifice
that...
your family.
Sacrifice,
oh my God,
to your family.
Oh, okay. I'm sorry. I was like, you Canadians, you're yeah, worse than the Aztecs.
We're hardcore.
No. So really, I mean, it comes down to the fact that it is a job, and although it doesn't seem like work a lot of the time, it's definitely something you have to put your all into, right? And so going into it with that mindset, there's a couple ways that you can kind of, you know, get your feet wet. Me personally, I started off as a programmer, and I worked in EA. I worked for the animation group out in Burnaby, and you know, did a little bit of work out there for a couple of years, and then essentially I became a producer after that. And the reason I got into the industry was because I really loved games, and that was it from the very beginning, and that passion kind of drives it through. And a lot of people have that passion, but you have to kind of back it up with a set of very, very marketable skills. Whatever that skill set might be is up to the individual. You know, you might be an excellent programmer, an excellent artist, but you have to be able to build, I would say a demo, but more along the lines of a portfolio, something that you're proud of that you can go forward with. And oftentimes that doesn't get done unless you really, really set your mind to it, because real life gets in the way. And, you know, you have these cool ideas for these amazing games or things that you want to make, but your day job and all the other things kind of gets in the way, and you never get to finishing it. But if you ever want to break into the industry, you have to finish that stuff. You have to basically show people that you're extremely passionate about it.
Excellent.
You know, if you want to get into BioWare specifically, you have to obviously have an understanding for what makes great story-driven games. And that doesn't necessarily mean, you know, being the biggest super fan of all the games. You know, if you can come to us and tell us, you know, where your mind is at in terms of design acumen for, you know, these narrative and story-driven games, and give us some examples of what you've worked on in the past, that really goes a long way. So
what made you make the leap between programming and producing?
Well, you know, it, like most people, when you get into a job, something, you can tell if it fits naturally or if it doesn't. I went to school for programming. I mean, that was my first degree, and they kind of really teach you the basics, right? They teach you how to code, and, you know, they teach you the toolkit for what you have to learn with. So after I got my degree, I kind of wanted to practice on it a little bit, and I worked outside of games for a bit, and I kind of figured that, you know, hey, this is something that I really like and I really enjoy. Once I got to, you know, to working basically day in and day out in the programming stream, I realized that my skills weren't necessarily as as applicable to like what it took to be extremely successful as a programmer. Mm-hmm. And I give like a lot of credit to those guys, because they have to be extremely logic driven, extremely smart. And, you know, I basically went through the ropes, and I figured, you know, I like more of the working with multiple teams. I like, you know, 90% of my job being communication, 90% of my job being, you know, trying to rally behind an idea or a vision. That just came naturally to me. So, you know, it's not that I didn't like programming. It's that it's just I felt a better fit being a producer. Mm-hmm. And, you know, of course, I started out on the junior ranks producing, and a lot of the specific skills to a discipline really helps when you start out as a producer. So, you know, I was working with tech teams, working with programming teams, because I understand what the day-to-day job was of those teams, and therefore I could act as kind of a better producer or a better project manager for them. And it just kind of went from there, really.
Excellent. How many hats exactly do you have to juggle as a producer on something like huge AAA, like a Mass Effect title? I mean, you know, I hear rumors that, you know, producers on these titles, you do literally a little bit of everything. I mean, is that really the case?
Well, in terms of the content creation, we trust that the very talented teams who are working on the games are the experts in that. But what we have to do is we have to have a really, really solid understanding of how all those pieces fit together and how all of those pieces can kind of fit to make a cohesive and amazing AAA experience. Now it can be... you can be, your skill set would be in multiplayer, your skill set can be in narrative story-driven content, whatever the vision for that game is, whatever that vision for the product is, you have to understand how all of those groups, concept art, character art, levels, design, audio, everything fits together to make that experience. And then you basically have to work on behalf of all of those teams and help to bring something together kind of that suits the larger purpose.
Interesting.
Yep.
So I would assume then that, you know, to be successful, you need to have a really strong understanding of the market and kind of, you know, feel what other games are like to bring kind of more experience to the table. Do you play a lot of outside games, I mean, outside of BioWare?
Oh, absolutely. I honestly don't think you can be a good game designer or producer or, you know, one of those, the creative type roles without playing games nonstop, and by nonstop I mean experience as much that you can that about what's being put out there. I mean, right now I'm playing. It's very actually difficult to keep on top of one particular game because so much has come out.
It's crazy right now, yeah.
You know, like I'm going all the way back to even last year. I'm finishing up a couple games that I didn't get a chance to finish last year. So Uncharted 3, I'm playing through now.
Nice.
Yeah, I'm really having a good time with it. I played through Transformers Fall of Cybertron, which is kind of like a sleeper hit, which came out this year, which I really was not expecting much from, but that was really fun.
Wasn't the ending of that game spectacular? Not to cut you off, but the end where you jump between characters like that, I just thought it was incredible. Spoiler, sorry.
Spoiler alert.
Yeah, it was really amazing, and the production values on that game were extremely high. You know, so I was totally happy with that. I'm playing a little bit of the Halo 4 campaign right now on Legendary, because that's kind of how I play the Halo games. Just like I get my ass handed to me 100 times over, and eventually I get better. And what else? What else am I playing? A little bit of Assassin's Creed. I'm kind of saving that for the new year when I have a big bunch of time. And I grabbed Hitman over the weekend.
So, I hear Hitman's great. I heard that was surprisingly great.
Yeah, they do a really good job at kind of making the whole assassination kind of thing more accessible in terms of gameplay mechanics. Mm-hmm. You know, like you could always kind of run and gun through it, but now it's a lot easier to, I guess, without spoiling anything, encourage the player to play stealthily without punishing them too much. But you know, I'll play through that when I have some more time. But I'm really looking forward to Far Cry next Tuesday. So
I've heard great stuff about that as well. A lot of people that have gotten a chance to review that early have said that that is surprisingly awesome. So definitely let us know what you think about that one, because actually I don't know if that one's on our list for the site. So maybe Scott will be playing it, but I don't know. So
You know, they're really smart to release the embargo for reviews weeks ago, even though it wasn't out until December 4th. Mm-hmm. But they let the review scores kind of trickle out early, because it is such a solid game quality-wise, from what I'm reading. I don't have a copy myself yet. Mm-hmm. But I've loved the first two games. I mean, I loved the first one. The second one, it was a little dark, but I still kind of like the open-world aspect of it. So, I'm really looking forward to it.
Yeah, I think, you know, just from a layman's perspective, I think doing open world and keeping it interesting must be a huge challenge to keep the player interested with all that exploration and stuff. So if they manage to pull that off, then kudos to them.
So I can only imagine that it must be really, really tough with working on games all day. And then I'm sure you have a queue of games that are just piled up. And I mean, you already talked about like a million games that you're about to play. How do you stay inspired to keep playing? And or is there like a certain type of game that you like that no matter what's going on in your life, you just think, I have to do it right now?
Wow, what an amazing question, Hillary. I'd be glad to answer that.
Thanks, Mike.
This won't be the third time we've done this. Shh, secrets.
I don't think there's any specific, you know, type of game that I have to pick up no matter what. You know, I'm not extremely brand loyal to a certain franchise or whatever. Like, I think that, you know, in order to get my $60, every game has to bring something. And most games, you know, in the AAA at least, well, and even in the casual space too, a lot of them do bring something special. And why I play most of them is so that I can help identify, at least for my own kind of understanding, what that brings. And, you know, it's kind of from all over the place. So if you look at a game like Skyrim, for example, obviously, you know, the adventure there is in all the little small derivations that you can do on your way from point A to point B. So if you're starting off at a place and you want a quest done and you're walking to point B, there are probably like 100 different things that can steal your attention between point A and point B. You can really get lost and immersed in that. That's what I like about that. Yeah. You know, other games like Grand Theft Auto, if you've seen the trailer for Grand Theft Auto 5, the thing it's so slick. Like, the whole thing is just full of, like, polish. And, you know, the subtleties that you'll notice throughout that trailer and throughout the kind of the narrative that they're trying to build for you, I really glom onto, like, and I did for GTA 4 as well. So, you know, like every game kind of has something like that you can say, like, hey, that's cool. And most times it's enough to basically bring you through the entire experience all the way to the end, and you know, and then you can put it down. Sometimes it's not enough, but I guess that's really why I play games, or as many as the games as I can, just to kind of identify those things.
Awesome. Well, our final question is our Nerd Appropriate signature question, and this is one we'd like to ask everyone. We've gotten a variety of interesting responses, from floaty pens to addiction to horrible
iOS games.
To pickling.
Yeah, we had a person that was taking pickling classes last week. But the question is, what is your secret nerdy hobby or passion, or maybe something that you collect or something you enjoy that you don't really talk about because maybe you're on the edge of being ashamed by it?
Let me think. Yeah, it's funny that that I didn't actually think about a better answer to this question. Yeah, I don't know, man. I spend all my time or all my free time playing games and watching movies, which I don't really think is nerdy anymore. Like, you know, if you would have caught me 10 years ago, I would have been lynched for that.
Mm-hmm. Strange how that happened, right? No, I totally agree with you. It's changed a lot.
Yeah, all my high school bros never really thought that was the cool thing to do, but it turns out now it's the cool thing to do. Anyway, what else? I don't know. I listen to, like, weird German Nordic metal.
That's awesome.
Yeah, and I have a variety of kind of geeky-type movie posters kicking around my house. And
you have one in particular that makes you, like, the king of awesome.
Uh-oh.
Yeah, that's my prized Indiana Jones Raiders of the Lost Ark poster signed by pretty much everyone who's important on that movie. That's kind of my prized bit of, like, geek collectible-ness. I don't know.
That's a pretty amazing prize.
Yeah. Harrison Ford. Please, that's awesome.
I know. Such a dreamboat. So really, I'm not super geeky in any specific one way. I'm more like a 6 out of 10 geek in like 100 different ways, which makes me universally just a total loser. But you know, that's how it works.
That's excellent. Well, thank you so much, Mike, for coming on multiple times and hanging out with us. And the door remains open anytime you ever want to come on and just hang out and talk about games or movies or whatever. You're always welcome to come back.
Cool. All right.
Okay, we're back from our chat with Mike Gamble. I am eager to try out that Omega DLC, and hopefully you guys are downloading it right now.
Yeah.
Sure.
Yeah. Awesome. Awesome.
I mean, we're not
he had a lot of insight as to how he got his start and everything. So it's interesting to see that he came from, you know, a programming background and moved his way up to production. And every time I talk to different people that work on games, it's always interesting to see how they have such different backgrounds, you know. Mm-hmm. So, some of them started out as writers, some of them started out as programmers, but in the end, you know, they all start, you know, end up working on the stuff that we really like, which is really kind of encouraging.
I don't know. I think basically whatever discipline you decide to go into, it sounds like in the video game industry, particularly, having some kind of project management training is a good thing to do. Mm-hmm. So, even if you're in, you know, marketing, it's interesting that, you know, it has such a heavy value in the video game industry.
Absolutely. And it definitely helps to be Canadian.
Yes, it does.
I would say statistically, I would say one third of all Canadians are in the video game industry. One third of all. That's true.
Yeah, it's funny. When I think of like Montreal, I think of like only video games.
Well, that's all there is, right? It's just one big building with like all.
There's BioWare and Ubisoft.
I'm pretty sure another third of Canadians just play indie music and they're signed to arts.
Yeah,
and
they
crafts.
Play indie rock. Yeah, exactly.
And hockey.
Let me actually explain what my mind's eye looks like when you talk about Edmonton. I picture a big brick building that's like really tall, and it's just surrounded by like hundreds of miles of snow, and that's.
One building?
That's it. There's just one building, and that's BioWare Edmonton, and then the rest is snow.
I'll tell you what. When I went to Edmonton, I was surprised at how much land they have. Like, it's huge. Like, the entire city is ginormous, but it's because everything is so spaced out. Mm. You know what I mean? You never have, like, two buildings, like, next to each other. There's, like, a mile in between. It's crazy.
That is crazy. Cool. Well, we have a lot of stuff to talk about. We're going to do some quick reviews of some of the stuff we've been playing, and a couple of them are reviews in progress. But I guess the first one on the list is the latest piece of DLC from Borderlands 2, which is called Mr. Torg's Campaign of Carnage. Explosions. Yeah, Mr. Torg pretty much is Macho Man Randy Savage.
The badass creator of badassitude.
It's incredible. I can't get enough of just how lighthearted these games are. They're so ridiculous, the Borderlands games. But this latest piece of DLC probably has about, 5 to 6 hours of content in it. Longer if you really want to dig like deeply into it and actually go for something.
Oh man, is there a lot of fighting in the game?
There's a lot. So
I know that's a cornerstone of Borderlands, but this one has a lot of fighting in it.
Absolutely, yeah. There's one zone just called the Beatdown, and if you walk into the Beatdown, there's just like 8,000 guys that are just, you know, have their guns trained on you.
It's awesome.
But the DLC is all about a new vault that was discovered in this new zone of Pandora, and Mr. Torg, who owns the Torg Firearm Company, he goes down and tries to set up an arena battle to test to see who the biggest badass in all of Pandora is. And you, of course, enter the fray, and you have to get sponsored by some of your favorite Borderlands characters. And it's pretty cool. It has a nice little story to it. It's not really – this one is not as rich in story as Captain Scarlet's Pirate's Booty. But but it is still a whole lot of fun. And I would venture to say this is a much more difficult piece of DLC, especially some of the challenges, like for instance, some of the arena battles have three tiers, and the third tier is exceptionally difficult, especially
impossible.
So,
yeah,
it's very, very hard. So some of them took me, 10, 15 tries to beat. So it's not easy.
And how about a shout out to putting racing in the game?
As a
quest objective. That's awesome.
I really enjoyed the racing. I complained a lot about it because I was telling Scott in the break that, the racing challenge, the third tier of the racing challenge, you have about a minute and 45 seconds to hit all these waypoints and actually make it to the finish line. There's enemies in the way. There's guys on motorcycles shooting at you. And I kept getting down to where there'd be like 3 or 4 seconds left on the clock, and I could not make up that time until I figured out, exactly how to do it. And it was a huge challenge.
I got three tips for you. I can tell you something, and I'm going to give you just the tips here. Uh-huh. Obviously, there are shortcuts on the racetrack. Yeah. You like that?
I love when Scott gives me just the tips.
Okay. So obviously, there are shortcuts.
It doesn't count as cheating if you just give me the tips, right?
Right.
Exactly. It's a trap.
No, but seriously. Obviously, there are shortcuts on the racetrack. That's one thing. And then after I finish it, I realize that somebody, I think it's Ellie. What's her name? Somebody actually gives you a relic that makes your boost.
Yeah, afterburner. I kept that fucking bank. Thank God I kept that.
Yeah, right. And then the other thing I realize is that if you're playing with more than one person, you can just cheat.
Yeah.
Like, so you have one person start at the starting point, and you have the other person start at the first checkpoint. And so as soon as they cross the start line, you just hit the second checkpoint and run the rest of the race, and you shave off like 15 seconds.
That's incredible.
Yeah, it's super cheap.
I didn't have that luxury, so I had the afterburner, but I had to sit there and like basically memorize the track.
Hey, man, we invited you to join us. You just mismatch levels, you know?
I know. I was too leet for you dudes.
Super leet. We're getting there. We're like at 45 now, so we'll be there in no time.
I was way too leet. I tried the raid boss, by the way, the new Pyro Pete, the raid boss. I definitely need some help, so cool. get there, man.
Well, we're at 45. We've got those other raid bosses, so we'll meet up and do that.
Awesome.
So that's Borderlands 2 DLC Explosion. Yeah.
I like that. I like that fire sound.
Thanks.
Dude, that was a pretty fancy fire sound.
Yeah, we should, when you edit this, you should just add explosions to the middle
review.
Of the review.
Yeah, I can do that.
Yeah. All right. So anyway.
Awesome. So Halo 4.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
Scott, I mean, not Scott, Matt.
That's me.
Are you guys ready to try this
again?
You can
talk to Scott about it too if you want.
No, I did actually, yeah. Scott, you're awesome. But Matt.
That's me.
I just want to say that you may have been right and I may have been wrong. So I've actually played some Spartan Ops.
Awesome.
Which is the
Tell
multiplayer.
Us what Spartan Ops is.
I need to know more about this.
Okay, so Spartan Ops has this component where you're playing episodes of chapters, and once you complete a chapter, there's only 3 available right now, but once you complete a chapter, you can watch an episode. But it's really, really fun. So you get to go in with you and I think a second player. I usually play it at home with Dave, so we've been killing lots of aliens together, which is great for our marriage. So
it's therapeutic.
It is.
Yes, exactly. So you go through and there's different objectives, basically like wiping out the area of enemies, and you get to do you get to fight against Covenant plus the new aliens, which is pretty fun. Lots of cool guns.
Did you fight Hatham?
No, I don't fight Hatham.
Oh, okay,
man,
am I confused right now?
You are confused.
Continue.
So I have to. So okay, keep going then. Because they're on episode 4 now, right? This weekend 4 opens up. They've done 3 so far.
No, you know, it's funny. I played last night and I could only go through 3. Soon on episode 4. It's just a lot of fun. Just, you know, kind of tag teaming. And you get to hear Jennifer Hale give you squad orders, which is kind of fun. But yeah, so I haven't really made any progress in the single player campaign. I've mostly been playing Spartan Ops. But it's a lot of fun.
So how far did you get in the single player?
Oh, I just started it.
So, okay. Did you get through like the intro completely or did you just do...
Yeah, no. Yeah. So basically I started it and then Dave took over and then signed in his Xbox login. So I didn't get any credit of it. Stick. But yeah, no, I watched until, after the first kind of section.
Okay.
Yeah.
Because
I was like, oh. Yeah.
Yeah, I have kept up with the single player. I have not done Spartan Ops yet and I've been waiting to. So maybe I'll jump in on that with you guys at some point, but because it's up to 4 player, right? Isn't it 4 player co-op?
I'm not sure. Yeah, I've only played it on my local console. Yeah. So
well, I'll have a copy soon. So
as will I.
The single player really opens up once you hit the new race of aliens.
Okay.
You hit the Forerunners, which are called It sounds just like the Mass Effect name. To be honest,
I swear it sounds just like Prothean.
Progenitors it sounds just or something. Like it's really close to that. It's Protheans.
The Brotheans.
The Brotheans.
What's up? What's up, Master Chief? We're the Brotheans.
What's up, Chief?
What I wanted to say to kind of vindicate you somewhat is that it is still Halo at its core.
Yes.
Although I would say that I think it's an improved Halo. Like I think the story makes a little bit more sense. They focused it more on. More on you and Jesus.
Cortana?
Jesus.
Yes, thank you. You and Jesus. More on you and Cortana. A little bit more personal. It's a little less like weirdly religious with this like gigantic scope that makes no sense in the basis of the game. So there's that and I do think the new guns and I think you mentioned them, the new guns are kind of awesome.
The ones that the dog aliens drop is amazing. I love that gun. I don't know what it's called, but I always try it. I'm like, kill a dog so I can get a gun.
All of the new alien guns are like completely imaginative and I like how they work. They sound and feel good. Like they've done a really good job on that stuff. And I would say even the new, because there's 2 new marine guns too that you can pick up. There's like a rail gun kind of and something else. And they're both. It just seems like what 343 did was like not F up and put a lot of attention to the detail as opposed to just like trying to continue. Yeah,
we've been talking about it for years, but the feel of weapons is really important. And
I know, and I used to make
what you guys are saying. It sounds like they did a great job with that.
They really did. And it's just, it plays really well. It does look, I know, I guess it's cartoony to some, but it does look really gorgeous to me. I think the lighting effects are awesome. There's parts where you're running through like, this kind of lush forest and there's all these like little phosphorus and like things floating around you while you're running through it. And I think if you like the real comparison for me is just because I've been a Halo player since Halo 1 is to like line it up against any one of the other Halos, including Reach, which was gorgeous. And it looks amazing. Like they really did a great job of pushing the Xbox for this game.
I'll tell you what, you're making me really excited to play this game.
Yeah, me too.
It's fun.
I'm definitely more eager than I was. You know,
the thing is, like, it's a Halo game, so don't put your expectations that it's going to be Mass Effect because it's not. But it is still a really good Halo game.
Yeah,
like,
but
we played
Reach together, and that was super fun. That was great.
I enjoyed that. Yeah.
So my main complaint about the gameplay in Halo is that there is not an efficient cover system. But that just drives me insane. Like,
that's a cornerstone
you can duck.
Of Halo. That's just like an old school thing.
That was like the difference between Gears and Halo. You know, like one was like you're grounded, so you could never jump or do anything else, but you had cover. And then Halo is like, it's the more, you know, superhero-y where you can jump 20 feet in the air for unknown reasons. But
yeah, you're like, ah!
And you can still do cover, but it's like the old school cover. It's no snap to cover, essentially, is what you're saying.
But like,
yeah, I mean, you can duck and hide behind something, Halo, but it takes a lot more effort.
Halo harkens back to those days where, like, when you'd get into a multiplayer battle with somebody else, like, your defense was just jumping, like, repeatedly over and over again.
Rocket Jump.
And I love that. It's like, I'm glad that it still retains its old, you know, style. I mean,
there's definitely a place for it.
It's also the AI I wanted to mention is much better. I would say probably more in line with Reach, but I would say that the thing that I noticed, I would say, I would say that.
Interesting.
Because I went from expert down to, or veteran down to, what are the levels? My brain, like, not here to this morning. I started in the highest level, the hardest one, and then I jumped down one because that was way too hard for me.
Yeah.
When I did that, I actually noticed that the AI started reacting a little bit differently. They definitely put some thought into the AI again this time. It really seems like a very well-polished game for one that everybody thought was going to be a total turd because it's a new studio on a title. Usually that means that it just gets crapped on and is very good. And this is just, I've found some fault, not a lot yet. My biggest gripe with the game is the freaking save system and where your checkpoints are, which is, good Lord, like, you'll die and then they'll fast forward you like 20 minutes back or rewind you 20 minutes back.
Ooh, ouch.
It's painful when you're in a hard game where you die, you know, a decent amount of times. And it's like, oh, we're going to zoom you all the way back like to the very beginning of this level because we don't know where to put checkpoints in to make this fair. Like, it just, that was really brutally hard. And I don't know why games, you just can't save them whenever you, I feel like I should just be able to be like, save here.
But there are people who would save like every 2 seconds. You're like, oh, I killed an enemy, save. I killed another one, save. I killed another one, save. I don't know. I think the energy blade is way overpowered. That's just my two cents.
But that's kind of,
you also have to like tickle a guy to use it. You know what I mean?
You have to get like way up on somebody to use it.
So you use the tickle tickle.
No, but no, when the aliens use it against you, it's like one hit done. You're like, what?
Yeah, I mean, but that's the thing of it.
That's how it works.
Yeah. I mean, similar to a modern day machete.
Yeah, it looks surprisingly like an Omniblade. It's
true.
So anyway,
I'm glad you guys are liking it. It's funny. My mom actually listened to the last podcast because she's our number one fan. And she says, will you tell me what Matthew and Hillary argued about? Because I don't know why they would fight.
Did she really say that?
She really said that.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah, and to be fair, it wasn't really like a fight. It was an argument.
It was kind of an argument and a fight.
It was an argument and a fight.
I don't know about that.
I cried.
And it was a fighty argument.
I just picture us Homer and Bart style strangling each other while we're doing it.
Yeah, that's what happened.
At least on my side, I wasn't going to any low blows.
That's true.
Well, maybe we should move on to the other side of the fight and talk a little bit about Halo 3. Yeah.
Halo 3?
Or AC3, you mean?
AC3, yeah, sorry.
So very quickly, I have not beaten AC3 yet because I've been relatively busy playing other stuff, but I'm still playing AC3, and I'm actually really enjoying it now. I'm about, I wouldn't say about, 35-40% done with the game. Doing a lot of side missions and stuff.
I have the same question.
Have you figured out who the hell Haytham is?
I do. I know exactly who that dude is. And I'm not going to explain it.
But, okay, good.
He is actually of great importance. But what I do have to say, just, I'm not going to explain, the combat is much improved. It's so enjoyable to do the melee fighting in Assassin's Creed 3. They improved it a whole lot, and I enjoy it more than I ever have in the series.
Rope darts.
The other thing that I want to say is absolutely incredible is the ship combat.
Like,
people aren't talking about this enough. But Ubisoft, they created probably one of the best like naval battle simulators I think I've ever played. It's absolutely incredible. You can set your sails to different speeds. You have control over different cannons.
Let me ask you this.
You have to watch the wind. There's like these rogue waves, and you have to steer your ship a certain way and like duck down.
So awesome.
It looks beautiful.
Is it better than Sid Meier's Pirates?
You know what's great? It actually has... I loved Sid Meier's Pirates, and I'm not just saying that. I played that game a lot when I was a kid. And there are a lot of things that are very, very similar to Sid Meier's Pirates. And I wouldn't argue that the guys that made this game probably played a lot of Sid Meier's Pirates because, while this is all in 3D and everything, a lot of the mechanics are still the same. Like, you have to
basically broadside enemy ships in order to fire your cannons at them. You have to watch the wind velocity. You know, you have to look out for sandbars and all that stuff. It's very much like Sid Meier's Pirates, except for
that's awesome.
You are a ninja assassin guy.
You should really concentrate on upgrading your ship too. I did that, and it made it so expensive.
I'm
I know, but
tourist.
It really helps.
I'm like a hobo assassin. Like, I cannot make money in this game. I don't know what I'm doing.
I actually have a real question for you guys about this.
Sure.
Because something just occurred to me. Are there any? Because I remember in the past, these Assassin's Creed games would have things that you could do, like via like an iPhone app or a website. Do they have anything like that now that you can use to buff your like Brotherhood or anything like that in this game?
Not that I'm aware of.
Yeah,
it hasn't popped
know.
Up anything on the you know.
Okay, I was just
game.
Curious. I didn't know if it had any other like media tie-ins to this particular title.
One other thing that I'll just touch on briefly is the crafting system, which is my one qualm with it so far. It's really huge and robust, and basically you're building like a manor, like out in the wilderness. Mm-hmm. You know, you're building up this giant, you know, sort of like you did in AC2. But this is actually, I feel like, a little bit more complicated, which isn't a good thing. You have to set up like different trade routes and crafting recipes and stuff. And I just kind of find it to be a little like mind numbing, and it makes me upset when I look at it.
Okay. So the thing that I did, I just knew that there was an achievement for building one of Ben Franklin's inventions. So I did that. Just run around and like help out the people on your homestead. There's a quest that has to do with, it's called the Encyclopedia of the Common Man. Yeah. I didn't actually get that achievement because I couldn't figure out like when they were doing what. And I was kind of like, I can't be bothered with this.
Yeah, yeah.
But if you set up all your land convoys, like go around the frontier and find, all of the stores. One thing that did kind of bug me about the AC3 map system is that it doesn't really update that well, so it doesn't mark things on your HUD as much.
Yeah.
There were some issues. I don't know if they fixed it because I know they just had a patch. But yeah, if you find all of the stores, you can send convoys to them, and you should totally do that because okay. if you just keep sending them out and then watch your risk too, you'll start making money.
I do have a quick question.
Sure.
And it's not Haytham related, although I was going to make that joke before Scott did, and then I let Scott make it.
Brilliant minds.
Yeah, think alike. The combat, one of the things with AC 2 and 2.3 and 2.6 that I didn't notice until I played like Arkham City was the combat always felt really slowed. Is it faster? Like, do you know what I mean? Like, did it, there's a lot of like stand and wait and then swing once and then stand and wait. Did they kind of work on the combat system at all
they
or does
did.
It feel
I,
the same?
I feel like it's a lot more fluid now.
Does
I
mean, it? Cool.
It's definitely, it's not as polished as Arkham City because I don't think there's ever been, you know, a beat 'em up game with that much polish. But even this doesn't, I don't think comes close, but it's the best it has been. I mean, there's a lot of
that's
different
awesome.
Melee options, which are great, but you don't feel, I feel like in Assassin's Creed, Revelations, AC2 Revelations, you kind of felt clunky by all the options that you had. You had a little
yeah.
bit too many. Now I think they streamlined it a bit. So you really only have like, you know, three or four major melee options, and then you can use a lot of gadgets and trinkets and stuff as well. But it definitely feels very nice. And it's really satisfying when you jump into a group of like 30 soldiers and you can take them all out. I mean, because you can this time.
That's awesome.
It's really great.
Do you like your rope darts? I swear I use those.
I mean, yeah.
not just to, you know, hang people from trees, which is really, really satisfying, but you can use it within a battle
yeah.
situation, like, and pull enemies towards you and then use them as a human shield. Like,
you're
that
like,
is so much fun.
Basically, you become Scorpion.
Get over here!
Yeah,
it's so like, cool.
So fun.
Awesome.
It's so fun. So good. It's a lot of fun. Definitely the first, you know, 4 hours of AC3 are a little confusing and maybe a little bit slow. But once you get into the actual guts of the story and it becomes a lot of fun. So hang in there.
Cool. Well, let's talk the final episode, Walking Dead episode 5. No
how are you
going to
talk about this without spoiling
well, okay.
everything?
I'm just going to talk about how much of a triumph I think this game is. And
okay.
and beyond that, I'm not going to get into any story details. You know, we've been talking about this game for months and months and months now because it is episodic. And, you know, Telltale's known for doing these large adventure games. And they were kind of taking a risk releasing it in episodes. But it turns out, you know, it has been selling very well. And so episodic games are kind of here to stay, at least from Telltale, which is great. And it looks like in a couple weeks they're actually going to be releasing all of The Walking Dead in retail stores as well. So they're kind of doing a little bit of both. you know, a lot of people are sick of zombies, but what I want to tell people that are sick of zombies and probably want nothing to do with The Walking Dead is that, you know, you guys have probably heard this before, but this really isn't a game about zombies. It's a game about survival in a kind of unforgiving world that is falling apart.
Yeah, and it's more about the relationships between the characters. Yeah,
it really is. And it's a incredibly well-written adventure story. And the whole basis of the story is about a man who's kind of out of time. I don't want to give up too much about, you know, about the main character, but he probably shouldn't really, you know, be alive in the first place. And it's all about him forging this relationship with a young girl who's lost her family.
Chance at life.
Yeah, he gets a new chance
to start over.
Exactly. So it's a sort of an unlikely friendship between a young girl and a man who had some bad luck in the past. We'll just put it that way. But you know, it is just an incredible story, and I ended up caring so much about, you know, the supporting cast, and so much about what happened in the end that I just remember playing through this last episode, which I think is episode 5 is the shortest episode of all of them.
Interesting.
I ended up having like completely sweaty hands the entire time, and I was sitting like probably like 3 feet away from my screen, just kind of staring at it. And by the time it was over, I literally put my controller down and just kind of took a deep breath, like winded, you know, because it is a very dramatic, very emotional story. And it has a lot of ups and downs. But, you know, I think this format, the adventure format, is the only way that a game like this could have ever been made, because it doesn't center around action. It doesn't center around shooting or jumping or anything like that. The mechanics are all about, you know, talking and storytelling. And quite possibly, like, one of the most dramatic moments in the game is near the end. You just sit down and have a conversation with somebody. And
wow,
it's literally a 5-minute conversation, and you're sitting there choosing your dialogue options and, you know, trying to remember things that your character said in the beginning of the game. But it's brilliant, and it really is just so well done, and really scary. Like, I, you know, you guys know I've been playing horror games since they first existed, and I don't think any game has ever made me feel this uneasy before. So wow. It is something that everyone needs to go out and pick up now. Each episode is about $5, whatever format you want to buy it on. It's on iOS now. You can get it on, you know, iPad. You can get it on Steam, PS3, Xbox 360. So definitely pick it up. Telltale did something really great, and this is definitely on my short list for probably game of the year.
Awesome.
That's amazing. That's nice. Awesome.
Yeah, I loved it.
So over Thanksgiving, I got to see Lincoln, the Spielberg movie, which is pretty amazing. So basically, Thanksgiving was all about America.
Nice.
It was really fun. So obviously, Spielberg, the quality is fantastic. It started off a little bit slow, but man, did it recover. I mean, within the first, like, the first 20 minutes to a half an hour is like, oh, I don't know. It seems like pretty biopic-y, something that I might see on, like, History Channel. Acting was good, but I was like, oh, there's not much going on. But as soon as you hit that first half hour, it's just whoosh. It's, like, right there. And you're, like, thrown into the end of the Civil War and he gets the 13th Amendment passed. And the best person, actually, you think that, you know, Daniel Day-Lewis was phenomenal, which he was, but Tommy Lee Jones stole the show. He was really? So unbelievable. Yeah, he was unbelievable. So, and Sally Field, being Mary Todd, was amazing. So you get to see kind of the intricacies in their marriage and how, you know, she blames Abe Lincoln for the death of their son. And you see all of the cool fighting that goes on the floor of the House of Representatives during the time when they're trying to abolish slavery, and kind of the opinions of the Republicans and Democrats, which are totally different than they are today. It's just really, it's such a great movie. And I think everybody should see it just because it feels like it's very close to history. So I can imagine that it's something kind of like this. And a lot of respect is shown toward Abe Lincoln and how he gets things done. I mean, there is a part, you know, where he seems kind of tyrannical, and there is a part where there's some bribes, but it all makes sense. And it's just amazing. I can't even put it into words. It's one of the best movies ever.
That's
so
amazing.
Everyone should see it.
Cool.
That is amazing. Yeah. Well, I think I might be going today, actually. So
I was just looking it up, and the writer-director pair, Spielberg and Kushner, the last movie they did together was probably one of my favorite Spielberg movies, which was Munich.
Ah, that's a great movie.
Yeah, so I can imagine that this is, you know, as equal in tension and drama, so if not better.
Yeah, and give it a little bit of patience at the onset. You'll be much rewarded.
How much of his life do they encapsulate?
It's really just the months preceding his death. So it's really the end. It's the end of the Civil War, and
wait, he dies.
What? Of course.
Those fucking vampires.
But I'll tell you what, though, they build up the tension to that so well. I mean, it's unbelievable. And yeah, I mean, of course, I cry at everything. But, you know, of course, you know, tears are streaming down my face. But it was so good.
That's awesome.
I think you'll really enjoy it.
Rare things I remember about visiting the Ford Theater is they used to, I don't know if the museum is still across the street, but I went when I was a kid, I think 7th or 8th grade, and they had the pillow that Lincoln laid on after he had been shot, and the pillow still had blood on it, and I still remember that vividly as a little kid, and that really was like kind of terrifying to me, being like, wow, like here is Abraham Lincoln, you know, like cool. So
two things about that. So in the movie, the pillow that he's actually laying on looks identical to the one that I've only seen it online.
Oh, okay.
But yeah, the blood pattern, everything looks very, they definitely took that into consideration.
Oh, wow.
But isn't it interesting that we still have like dried blood of Abe Lincoln? Let's clone the guy.
You know, I wasn't going to make that joke because you had a really good little review here, but that was honestly...
That's not demeaning at all.
No, I didn't mean that. I really didn't mean it that way. I apologize. But honestly, that was one of the first things as a kid that popped into my head. I remember being in 8th grade being like, they could clone Lincoln.
Yeah. Yeah. Overall, it's a definitely go see it.
Yeah.
It's 100%, and you'll be very proud of your country, and you'll also, it also gives a lot of perspective too. Like, you know, it's funny how every, you know, you turn on the news and you hear how much America is suffering, and you know, we're in the worst place and the worst economy, and oh, you know, the country's divided. But when you see the Civil War and you see how it was back then, you feel like, wow, we're on a good path.
Yeah. And that's like, I think it's important also just because we hear all this talk about, you know, like, oh, the founding fathers or this or that. And it's like, maybe people should actually get some real history on what was going on back then. And I love seeing stuff like this that is kind of a pop culture way of informing people of what it was really like at the time without, you know, having them sit down and read a 2,000-page biography about Lincoln, you know, because not everybody's going to want to do that or be interested in doing that. But I feel like a lot of people would love to go see a Spielberg movie with Daniel Day-Lewis, you know, like it's like such an easy sell. And I think so informative at the same time. So I'm so happy this is good. That's really awesome.
Yeah.
And the way that Daniel Day-Lewis portrays Lincoln is actually really, he makes him seem more soft-spoken and kind of a higher pitch voice. Like you always imagine Lincoln having this booming voice, but he's really like the guy who can convince you just by telling a story. You know, he gives like anecdotes, and it's so cool how he's able to get people on his side in an interesting way. So you'll really like it. I think that it was such a great thing. What, go ahead.
How many months before shooting do you think Daniel Day-Lewis walked around as Lincoln?
Yeah, right.
I actually read an article about that, and basically, like right before they started shooting, he told the guy who wrote the screenplay, you know, I'm not going to be able to talk to you at all while we're shooting. So he actually was like, you know, he's a strong method actor, and he basically became Lincoln. And the thing that I love too about this movie is that there's no modern day speech. Everything everybody says is so on the mark for period specific language. It's just awesome.
Awesome.
Cool. Yeah, it's good stuff.
Sweet.
Go see it.
Awesome. All right. Well, that about wraps things up for episode 82 of the Rated NA podcast. We hope you guys enjoyed our chat with Mike Gamble, and we will be back next week with more mayhem and chaos and explosions.
Explosion!
Yes. And big shout outs, of course, to Mike Gamble and also Amy Acker, episode 81. Check out 81 with actress Amy Acker, because she was gracious enough to come on our podcast, which was awesome.
Yeah.
What else?
And of course, Jimmy Hinson from Big Giant Circles. Thanks so much for the awesome music.
Yeah. You know, he did some music for Black Ops 2.
Yeah, I saw that.
So that's awesome. Good for him.
And also, we haven't mentioned this in a little while, but I wanted to include any new listeners we might have. If you have, we use music for breaks all the time. And if you have a band or you make music on your own and you want to have it played on the podcast, shoot us an email, either Scott or Matt at nerdappropriate.com, and we'll, or Ash or Hillary, but Scott and Matt do the editing. So mostly Scott, but shoot us an email and and we'll make sure to get it on and, you know, give you some props for sharing your music with us.
Excellent. Yes.
Well, thank you guys. Thank you for listening.
We'll catch you next week.
Bye. Let's do that again because that sucked.
It's a trap.